It's Monday, it's podcast day, but no Maddie this week. She's having a well-deserved day off. So you've got me, Lee Mossad, sitting in the hot seat, and I'm joined by my Racing Post colleagues, Graham Rodway and Mark Boylan, as we look back on the weekend just gone and look ahead to the week to come, which ends, of course, with the King George VI and Queen Elizabeth Stakes at Ascot on Saturday. More of that to come, more talk, no doubt, as well, of a star Aidan O'Brien trained filly in that race in Love. But a star Aidan O'Brien trained filly was in action at the Curragh on Saturday when Snowfall completed her Oaks double, following up an extremely easy and wide margin win at Epsom with a similarly easy and wide margin victory at the Curragh. Mark, you were there, weren't you? What did you make of her performance?
Yeah, I've just about cooled down after I've been there for the day. My God, I don't think I've ever been warmer at the Curragh. Yeah, and she did her a fair bit to turn the temperature up too. She was very, very good. You know, ultimately, I thought there were periods of the race where maybe she wasn't carrying Ryan absolutely powerfully through them stages. But once there was a chink of daylight appeared for the top of the straight, you have to be really, really taken by the way she's pulled clear. At the same time, you have to have reservations about the level of the form and behind her. But I think it's all about the style rather than the substance of what was in behind. And, you know, she's pulled really, really far clear. And just, you know, in context, I know Snow Fairy won it by 8 lengths, but this 8.5 lengths, it's the biggest winning margin since 1905 in the Irish Oaks. So pretty remarkable to have the Epsom Oaks or the Kazoo Oaks record broken at Epsom for 16 lengths and to break an over 100-year record at the Curragh as well. You know, it just goes to show you that we're really dealing with a top drawer filly. First Japanese bred to win an Irish Classic too. So lots of significance in the victory. And thought it was telling as well that Ryan Moore said that she was the best around at the moment when asked to how does she stack up in all the good mares and fillies that he's ridden. He was keen to not directly highlight one or another, but just thought that was an interesting line.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rodda, she's a fascinating filly because she was consistently beaten last season. She was 14-1 when she reappeared in the Musidora Stakes. It would have been impossible to believe, certainly, that she would have even been winning classics, or hard to anyway, let alone winning the way she's been winning them.
Absolutely, yeah. Very difficult horse to weigh up because not only was she going off 14-1 when she won the Musidora first time up at York, she had obviously been well beaten on several occasions as a two-year-old. And they seemed absolutely convinced that Santa Barbara was the superstar filly in Ballydoyle at the start of the season, not Snowfall. In fact, to the point where Ryan Moore completely deserted Snowfall in the Oaks, that she won by 16 lengths, to ride Santa Barbara. So it does make you wonder what Santa Barbara was doing at home at the start of the season and what Snowfall wasn't doing at home. Because, of course, she was 11-2 for the Oaks behind her stablemate. But she has just developed into an outstanding filly out of apparently nowhere. And I was keen to take her on Saturday at a short price. Yeah, I just thought that wasn't right. You know, that Oaks win. I know that she won by 16 lengths, but you don't see horses win like Oaks like that, do you? When you see horses win things like that, and you're of my sort of mind, you often sit there and go, oh, if it looks too good to be true, then it often is too good to be true. And you were taking her on at a short price, 2-7. So, you know, you wasn't going to lose a hell of a lot of money if you took her on and laid her, which I did. But, yeah, I must admit, like Mark said, I mean, about 4 or 5 furlongs out, I was fairly hopeful. I thought Ryan was pushing away a little bit to try and keep her on the bridle. But once she got in the clear, she absolutely powered home. I still think, in a way, I mean, this might be a bit of a hollow victory, but I still think I was kind of right. In that, I still don't think that Epsom form is entirely to be believed. I mean, she got an RPR of 123 at Epsom, and she didn't run to that mark when winning at the Curragh. She only ran to 119, but of course, that was still far, far better than anything else in the race. I just think we're going to learn a lot more about her, Lee, as the season goes on. Hopefully, she's going to face some proper horses instead of all these fillies she keeps beating up. And when she faces some proper horses, we can get an idea of how good she is. But she, of course, will be getting the fillies allowance off the mouths as well, which will also swing the tables in her favour. I think she will go on to prove herself absolute tip-top class. But I still think she's got to do it, Lee.
Well, that's interesting. And you talk about the fillies allowance there, Graham. As she moves towards what would be her logical autumn target, the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, she'll be getting the fillies allowance and the three-year-olds allowance as well, which maybe explains why at the moment in the betting for the Arc, she actually trumps Love, who we'll speak about later on in the program. But you can get between 3-1 and 5-1 about Snowfall. Next in the betting, there's Love at 5-1, 11-2. Then there's another Aidan O'Brien trained horse at Mark's Basilica, who could, of course, stick to 10 furlongs or even a mile as the season went on. Then you got horses like Tanawa, Wonderful Tonight, Adyar. There's next to no French horses at all prominent in the betting, so it's ripe for export this year. But I to ask the two of you again before we move on from the Irish Oaks, Mark first, Graham second, Snowfall, is she at the minute the worthy art favourite, and would you be taking any of the, well, the majority price seems to be 7-2, 4-1, would you be taking any of that, Mark, at the moment?
Well, if I had to be in a straight shoe between herself and Love, I think Love might be more naturally talented. But given that we have Arcs, which I think in 5 of the last 10 years or something along those lines have been run with an ease in the ground, and we know well that Aidan has stressed that Love absolutely is at her best when she gets rattling quick ground, I would have to think that if at the weights and everything considered, that Snowfall has a better chance of winning the Arc than Love. But I still think the Arc winner, we haven't seen her this season. I still think Tarnawa is going to pop up with this mastermind of a Dermot Wells strategy again to target the autumn, and you just get the sense that once the curtain came down on her season last year in Keeneland at the Breeders' Cup, that this was the date that was circled on the calendar to return to Paris, having won a Vermeil, having won an Opera, and I still am deeply, deeply excited to see what she can do. And if you get me a free tenner to have in the Arc, it'll be with her. But strictly on the O'Brien fillies, I'd probably just, in this particular set of circumstances, if we got an ease in the ground, give me Snowfall over Love.
Okay, what about you, Greg?
I think it's quite a difficult one, isn't it? It's no surprise that all the fillies are at the top of the list because, of course, like we're saying, they get the allowance, but there's a lot of really good fillies around at the moment. And I'm not 100% taken that Snowfall is the superstar that we think she is. I know that she's won 2 Group 1s by combined distances of 24.5 lengths, but she isn't really beaten true Group 1 horses in that race, in those races. Yes, she's beaten them easily, but there is question marks for me about how good those are in behind. When you look at Love, she has at least got a few decent names on her list, hasn't she, of horses that she's beaten, not least when she won last time out at Royal Ascot, when I thought that the trip might be a little bit shorter than her optimum. So it's going to be a fascinating match between the two. And don't forget, obviously, there's loads of others as well. Wonderful Tonight must have a huge chance if the ground comes up soft, because the form of that Hardwick is looking really, really good as well. It could be a cracking race, Lee, couldn't it?
I could be an absolute belter. And as you say, Graham, Wonderful Tonight, if they get the ground, she's certainly my choice. I thought she was hugely impressive at Royal Ascot, but she's, of course, better when it rains, which it often does at Paris in the autumn. It didn't rain at Newbury on Saturday like the Curragh. It was dry and it was hot. We'll have a canter now through the best races there on Super Sprint card. And Graham, I thought visually, by far the most impressive winner on the day was Real World, who followed up his Hunt Cup victory with success in the Steventon Stakes. And my word, he didn't half quicken towards the end.
Yeah, he answered some questions about himself there, didn't he? Because he's another horse a bit like Snowfall in that a lot of his form up until Ascot didn't really match up to what he showed at Ascot. I think he ran a big RPR of 113 or something at Ascot, and he hadn't run any higher than 92 previously. And suddenly that Ascot performance seemed to come out of nowhere. And you started to wonder, because sometimes the Ascot straight track can just be a bit of a specialist track. And if they got a good pace, it can throw up strange results. And I was starting to wonder, you know, is this a bit too good to be true? But then he's gone and done it in a completely different race, over 2 furlongs further, smaller field, round the bend at Newbury. And like you say, he looked really, really good. And that tells you that he is as good as he looked at Ascot. I thought he answered a lot of questions there. He got a racing post rating of 120 for that victory, Lee, which puts him £1 shy of the median RPR for all winners of Group 1s in Britain and Ireland since 2008. So he is only £1 off being a Group 1 horse. So I think he's a very exciting type, isn't he, Real World?
Exciting type, an exciting jockey as well. I love to see a jockey who celebrates going past the winning post. And Marco Gianni definitely does that. Is he a Group 1 horse, Mark?
Yeah, he's threatening that, isn't he? I mean, I'd love to see him back to a mile as well. I think he's definitely got the gears for that. And tactically, this wasn't a race that even panned out perfectly for him. You know, if you had to think that a race went well for one horse, you would have thought Darab. But the fact he's gone won in circumstances that didn't work out ideally. I think that tells you what the level of natural ability we're dealing with here. And I'd echo your sentiments with Marco Gianni as well. Channeled his inner Mikel Barcelona, and a man going places, but definitely a horse going places. Really looking forward to seeing him at a higher level. And even in a race where a strongly run mile, you know, you've seen how good he was at Ascot. Very, very exciting horse.
Yeah, Barcelona apparently was terrified of Andre Farb's reaction after that derby victory on Pournoir. I don't imagine Sidebin Saw is the sort of guy that would be upset at his jockey showing a bit of character. And I wonder if races now, Graham, like the Jumbo International, Irish Champion Stakes, they've all got to be on his agenda.
Yeah, you would have thought so. Those would be the obvious targets now. That was obviously only a listed race, but just the way that he did it was so taking. And Farr, of course, stepped up from handicaps to then go on to compete at Group 1 level, didn't he, for Godolphin? So maybe a slightly different profile to Farr, in that Farr came in off handicaps unbeaten, and he obviously took a few defeats in Maidan real well. But I think we're dealing with a different horse to the one we saw in Maidan over the winter, and he certainly has got the potential to go right to the top.
Okay, one that probably hasn't got the potential to go right to the top, but did win the Group 3 Hackwood Stakes on the card, Happy Romance. Graham, she's a likeable sort, good effort on Saturday, great record at Newbury. Will her limitations be exposed when she goes back into Group 1 company?
Yeah, I think they will be, but she's a very good horse, very tough, very genuine. I was very taken with the way that she won at Chelmsford earlier in the year. You won't see too many horses win races around Chelmsford in the way that she did, because she did absolutely everything wrong, got out the back. And Chelmsford is not the sort of track where you can win when everything goes wrong, because it's very tight and it all happens very quickly. And she came home to win very well. And that did convince me that she would have this race within her grasp. And she did it nicely. She'd obviously run nicely over 5 furlongs at Sandown on previous start. So she's fairly versatile with regards to trip, although I do think 6 furlongs is her optimum. I don't think she's much better than a Group 3 horse, though, Lee.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. Mark, would you concur on that one?
Yeah, pretty much. I think Diligent Harry is still on the cut of a little bit more to come. You know, a second start after a bit of a break. And just was encouraged by the way he kept rallying close home. Not a race that I think there'll be stronger races as we go forward in this division around kind of Group 2, Group 3 territory. But a solid performance.
Okay, and Mark, we'll just stick with you now. We look at the two-year-old action from over the weekend. Obviously, Newbury had the super sprint where Gubbas won that race yet again for the hand team. We've pretty much now won about 1 in every 3 runnings of the super sprint in its 30-year history. Chipotle probably an unlucky loser, or certainly unlucky in the running through that race. But we also had good group action for juveniles at the Curragh on Saturday. Beauty Inspire winning the Anglesey Stakes for Joe Lyons. Probably not as impressive as we maybe expected him to be at twos on. Which performances took your eye the most, Mark?
Yeah, for different reasons. I think Beauty Inspire wasn't as flashy as we expected, as you pointed out. But I think the first half of the race is just as important to watch as the second half of the race. He raced very freely, which seems to be not tallying with his overall character from what the Lions team know him at home. And the fact he's pulled it out of the bag and won in really, really gutsy fashion, I think that tells you, no more than when we're speaking about real world, I think this is a smart horse. Because, you know, he was there to be beaten against rivals that had far more experience than him, albeit it wasn't a vintage running of the Anglesey. But, you know, he's more than entitled now to step into the Phoenix Stakes Group 1, head on for a Middle Park, follow kind of a Siskin route for the Lions camp. I do think that he is up there with the very best two-year-olds around, even if that performance in Ireland, even if that performance didn't quite confirm that suspicion that he gave on debut. And, you know, Gubbas in the super sprint, I think, you know, you have to mark up the performance from a view of his inexperience. You know, only a second start back after, I think it was 99 days off, against far more experienced rivals in general. And I think the fact he's won again is testament to his overall talent. So look, things are going to get tougher for him going forward. You know, I look forward to seeing him in group company, but that would be a real test of where we know his ability lies. So I'm more interested to see how he comes forward from this start next time by Memas. I'd just be I won't say a watching brief, because I still think he's exciting in the right circumstances. But I'd be more interested to see how he goes from this run to his next one than Beauty Inspire. I think Beauty Inspire can prove a very, very good force this season.
Does either of the two horses, Graham, float your boat again as potential Group 1 animals before the end of the season?
Well, yeah, I mean, Gubbus has to be considered a possible Group 1 class because that is a very, very difficult race to win after just one run. Inexperience can often prove the undoing of horses in such a big field like that. 22 runners, of course, spread right away across Newbury's straight track. And I think only one once-raced juvenile had won it this century prior to Gubbus, and that was Temple Meads in 2010, who went on to win the Group 2 Mill Reef at the track later on in the season. So that tells you how good, really, you need to be to win it after having had just one run. And not only had Gubbus only had one run, but it was a long time since his previous run as well. It wasn't like he was coming in hard fit, really. It was in April when he made his debut, so he really did come on quite a bit for the run. And I think that he has definitely got the ability to compete at Group 2 level at the very least, if not in Group 1s. And the way Richard Hannon trains his two-year-olds is a bit different to the way his dad used to do them, isn't it? I mean, his dad used to be noted for having really speedy early types, but Richard Hannon Jr. tends to bring them along a little bit slowly, and they develop with age. And I'm expecting that will happen with Gubbus.
Yeah, showing great pace, isn't he? He made the point that the horse wasn't ready for Royal Ascot. It was still growing at the time, so he wanted to show some patience. And we'll see Gubbus next at Glorious Goodwood in the Richmond Stakes. And before we go into the break, Graham, just also on Newbury on Saturday, Scaramanga won the big two-mile handicap for Paul Nichols and Sylvester D'Souza, going well on his return to the flat. Paul's talking about the Goodwood Stakes over 2.5 miles. At Glorious Goodwood for that race. Is he the sort of horse that you could see following up at Goodwood?
Yeah, he could do, couldn't he? I think Jumps Training's got a pretty good record in this race, haven't they, over the recent seasons? I read that somewhere. I can't tell you that I came up with that stat myself. Someone said it somewhere, so it must be true. It's Paul Nichols and Sylvester D'Souza. I thought that the runner-up, Rodrigo Diaz, was absolutely desperate if you were on him, because he was given an awful lot to do by Jamie Spencer, who has in the past, of course, said, well, if you don't like the way I ride, then don't back my horses. This one went off 11-4 favourite, and he gave this horse a mountain to climb from the back of the field, and he absolutely flew home, and he was catching Scaramanga hand over fist, but he just came too late. So I think the wrong horse won there, to be fairly. I think Rodrigo Diaz is the best horse of the two, but they did pull 4 1/4 lengths clear of the third, and I think they're both fairly smart. Just with regards to that Goodwood race, the one where they go, it's a great race, isn't it? You race up the straight and then round the loop and then back down the straight. It's brilliant, because if there's a big crowd there, which there surely will be this year after all the COVID problems, like, you can see them all line up, can't you, right in front of the stands. And it can, you know, some horses have lost their chance, haven't they, at the start there, because they've got a little bit overhyped and a little bit sweaty because of the big crowd. So it'll be great to see big crowds lining up to watch them all jump off in that 2.5 mile race. But I've had a horse marked down for that race for a little while all season. Smart Champion. Yeah, he ran well in the race last year. And he prepped for the race, not at Newbury on Saturday. He actually turned up at Newmarket instead and was quite well fancied for a 1-mile 6-furlong handicap at Newmarket on Saturday, which I was very, very surprised about, because Newmarket's a fairly sharp track downhill all the way to the dip, over 1 mile and 6 furlongs. The Goodwood race, remember, is 2.5 miles, 6 furlongs further, and he is a very, very strong stayer. I always felt that Smart Champion might find that a little bit too sharp a test for him on Saturday at Newmarket, and that was the way he proved. He was very disappointing, but he was allowed to come home in his own time, and I just felt that was a nice prep run for that Goodwood race. So yeah, keep an eye out for Smart Champion for the 2.5 miler at Glorious Goodwood. I think he was being laid out for that race.
How very, very interesting, because in the old days as well, this was surprise listeners of a younger vintage, but at Glorious Goodwood they also used to run the Goodwood Cup over the same distance as the Goodwood Stakes. So horses like Stradivarius would have been starting in front of the stands and going 2 miles and 5 furlongs. But that died a death, much like the old TV soap Crossroads, which has no connection to Goodwood whatsoever. That was part one of the postcast. In part two, we referenced Paul Nichols earlier on, and we'll be talking jumpers again in part two of the postcast.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive premium content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started.
It was Market Racing's big day of the year on Saturday with their summer plate and summer hurdle card, providing entertainment for ITV racing viewers. And also, very much so, if you are the Bowen family, because Graham Rodway, Frankie de Belay won the summer plate yet again for Peter Bowen, who has won it on umpteen occasions, 7 times, I think, in all since the race was inaugurated. And a really impressive winner too.
Yeah, he's very, very good in the summer, isn't he, Peter Bowen? I mean, very good all year round, but the summer is when he makes his money, isn't it, Peter Bowen? He has loads of winners when the ground comes up fast. All of his horses seem to really handle decent ground well. I always look for him when it comes to that, those entry meetings that they have just after the Grand National. They have a couple of like evening fixtures there, and he has plenty of winners there. And yeah, like you say, he loves this race. This is one of his favourites, isn't it? Frankie de Belay, a tough old, genuine performer. It was that sort of race, wasn't it? Full of kind of exposed staying sort of chasers, but there was a favorite in there, Captain Tomcat, who was unexposed and lightly raced. He disappointed, didn't he? But I thought that Frankie de Belay did it well. But it's also worth giving a shout out to Keith Mel Rose, who tipped on the Friday podcast Stonific in the summer handicap hurdle, which was half an hour or so before that summer play, and Stonific won at 40-1.
That must trigger a bonus for Keith, mustn't it? Surely. The management must have that in place, that sort of encourage him. Okay, well, encourage him. Mark, anything from Marky Raisin that took your eye?
Yeah, I thought the ride was particularly good on Stonific. And Frankie de Burley just seems to be in rude health this time of year. You know, previously, if you look back through his form, I didn't really see this sort of scope for progression. I thought he'd hit maybe a little bit of a ceiling, but he just seems to be a better horse at the moment. And interesting, if he rocked up maybe at Cheltenham come November time, October time, you know, the ground was on the better side for him. Obviously, he seems to really rattle off it. I know he's won on soft as well, but yeah, in really, really good place at the moment. Galway Hurdle and Galway Plate Weights coming out today, so plenty more jumping action to keep on the brain over the coming weeks.
Have you seen any horses, Mark, over the last few weeks, 2-3 months, that you thought, Galway for that one?
Jesus, I have a list as long as my arm, I'd say, if I was to start talking, yeah. I'll tell you, actually, just before doing a piece, probably should be in tomorrow's paper, if not the day after, speaking to Peter Fahey, and Belfast Banter is a very, very interesting candidate for the Galway Hurdle. Just seems to have really turned a corner. Loves strongly run races and coming through ridden cold. You know, he looked like a horse for a long time. You'd be absolutely pulling your hair out that he just wouldn't go through with the job, but it's like a light has just gone off in his head and he knows what to do now. And rated 1.44, I think. I still think he could be interested in a race like the Galway Hurdle. The, you know, he handles the hustle and bustle, having won a county hurdle earlier in the year, and he showed a bit of class at entry too. So, you know, early shortlist, I haven't got a chance to obviously see the weights. I think they're due out around 3 o'clock, but that was one that was just on my radar there as a potential interest, and albeit he's pretty obvious.
Okay, two bits on one, finishing off this part of the programme with Mark, and we'll go with you first, because again, we're looking at the Curra over the weekend. Order of Australia, the Breeders' Cup mile winner from last year at Keenan, was back in winning ways, dropped down to 7 furlongs at the Curra on Saturday. What did that tell us about the horse?
Yeah, pleasing, because I was a bit disappointed, albeit maybe the race didn't unfold to suit at Ascot, but I was just a bit left underwhelmed, because he was a horse that when he won the Breeders' Cup, I know it's very easy to put it down as a shock, he was a huge price, but I thought the way he ran Hong Kong wouldn't dissuade the theory that he was going to be a top miler, and then he just left me a little bit disappointed, and obviously coming back a little bit later as well. Maybe it was just a case of needing that run and things not going quite to plan, but this was more reassuring if you're a supporter of his, and you know, he's entitled to now go on and have a crack at a Sussex. He's definitely got the gears. It's amazing when you see him do this over 7, considering they were campaigning the more middle distances for much of last summer. But he seems to have found his niche. And obviously from that family of Iridesa and Santa Barbara, there's plenty of speed in that pedigree.
And Graeme, although ability-wise, I probably couldn't see Order of Australia winning a Sussex Stakes. His run style, or certainly the style he ran with on the weekend, I think if Ryan Moore rode him that sort of way at Goodwood from the front, give him a tactical ride waiting in front, he could be a danger, couldn't he?
Yeah, it depends, obviously, who turns up for the Sussex Stakes. We're all hoping that we get the huge clash, aren't we, between Palace Pier and Poetic Flair. Should be an absolutely fantastic race, the race of the week. Next week, of course, now at Glorious Goodwood. It should be fantastic week. Love it down there. And he will be a bit short of that class, wouldn't he, if he turned up, Order of Australia. He kind of fits into that decent Group 2 horse in Britain. He is a Group 1 horse overseas, but... probably just fall short in Britain, given that we have a slightly better quality of turf horse than they do in the US, that's for sure, where he won his Group 1 at Keeneland. Just going back to Keith Melrose and his pay rise. I've lost count of how many letters I've had from readers in the past telling me that our tipster should get performance-related pay, basically saying that when they tip losers, we shouldn't get paid and we should only get paid when we tip winners. Now, I'm sure there will be loads and loads of skint tipsters should that be the case, Lee.
Would you be buying a big house at the moment, Graham, based on your recent performances?
Well, this year, I think I would have been all right, but my house wouldn't be as big as Mark Boylan's, that's for sure.
Hey, good answer. And just before we finish, there was a good, strong news line on Saturday evening, or not a good news line, if you're Mark Crean, who has been riding really well, making a name for himself. But at Doncaster on Saturday, he mistook the half furlong pole for the winning post, eased off and lost the race he should have won. He got a 28-day suspension for that, and he also got quite a lot of flack on social media, as tends to be the case. Mark, I don't know about you, my general perspective was the lad made a very bad mistake, but he made a mistake. We all make mistakes in life. I know there's a lot of pieces I've written in the Racing Post in the past, which I think with hindsight I might like to have had a second go at. Obviously, he's a jockey, you can't do that. He's not intended to do anything wrong, so although it was right, he was punished for it and got a suspension. I hope he can move on and bounce back. What was your take on it?
Yeah, very much the same view. And I think overall, you know, while Mark would obviously be keen to move on from it, he's been making great strides this season. I do think that the penalty, though, for, you know, someone who is an apprentice, who is claiming to make what has to be deemed an honest mistake. And you can see, if you see him in the final two strides when he realises his error, it's hard to watch, you know, because most of your heart has to go to anyone who does that. And of course, if you back the horse, I have great sympathy for you as well. But I just think a scenario where, you know, someone hasn't set out to do the wrong thing and, you know, hasn't, you know, put other horses at risk in this scenario, and he can't make a living fully for 4 weeks, nearly a month. Like, you know, in terms of other penalties that a rider can incur, you know, the maximum first penalty suggestion for careless riding, the maximum is 14 days. And even for dangerous riding, I think it's between 14 to 28. So I look at this and I think, God, if the maximum, if you're dangerously riding to the maximum and you're talking about 28 days for a first offence, this guy has made an honest mistake, you know, and he's realised two strides in the line when it's too late. And I just think maybe a little bit of leniency for someone that is having their first offence in this regard. Like, obviously, you have to have a strong penalty there, because the reasons that penalty is in place is obvious from an integrity standpoint. But when you have someone where there are circumstances, you can see the sun is quite low as well if you watch back the replay, and it's an honest mistake. And I honestly think that if you have maybe an apprentice where, if you say your first defence, 14 days, you know, or something along those lines, but a full 28 for a guy that's trying to make a name for himself. And, you know, obviously, times are different to when probably those penalties might have been initially implemented, when, you know, things aren't as scrutinised across the board in terms of social media, etc., jockeys being accessible. I know you can't go into it with a softly approach all the time, but just a little bit of leniency for apprentices or someone having their first offence, I think that would be a worthwhile recommendation in that regard.
Wise and measured words from Mark Boylan there, and that ends part two of the Monday Postcast.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive premium content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started.
Welcome back to the final part of our Monday Postcast. I'm Lee Mottershead and I'm joined by Graham Wadway and Mark Boylan as we now look ahead to the weekend. It's a cracking weekend. Obviously, there's great action at York. The York Stakes small field have been entered for that race, big sprint there. But really, Ascot is the place to be this weekend, the biggest race of the British summer on the flat, the King George VI and Queen Elizabeth Kipco Stakes taking place at Ascot on Saturday. We're not going to have a big field, particularly some of the horses who've been entered or left in the race, rather like Wonderful Tonight and Adabe, you'd imagine, would only run if we get a significant rain that doesn't seem to be forecast at Ascot. But in terms of the big guns, they are in the race. Love is generally 5-4 favourite at the moment. Adayar quoted between 7-4 and 9-4. Mishrif generally 6-1, same sort of price. About Lone Eagle, it is a wonderful King George. Mark, how do you see it? And have you got any early strong fancies for the race?
Yeah, we're just dealing with the latest field for it, so I haven't got a chance to totally dissect it in terms of tactical scenarios that could unfold. But I think the fact that Love has proven herself to be able to win in a different set of circumstances, you know, in a mile in the Guineas, you know, a mile and a half at Epsom and York, and then to get down and dirty in a race that was very, very tactical last time in the Prince of Wales, I think she's very versatile. And in terms of ground conditions, I think she's going to get exactly what she wants by the look of the forecast, as we discussed earlier off air. I just think that it's very, very difficult to get away from her for all that at that sort of price. An unexposed filly against her elders, against this sex, it's not something I'd generally be overly keen to go and attack with both hands, but I do think she's going to be difficult to take on. And Adayar now has the tools to go and take another step forward. But and I don't think there was no flash in the pan about his performance at Epsom. He is a very, very talented horse, but I just think the sort of experience, his first run against older horses, and while he has an advantage at the weights on the weight for age structure, I just think this will put hairs in his chest in terms of performance. Getting his experience and cutting his teeth in a race like this, it's still Love for me.
Well, it's a really wonderful race. It's like King George's of old, Graham, in some ways, is because we've got the Derby winner, which you always want to see in the King George, and you always used to see in the race's golden era, not so much really in the last two decades. You've got Love, a fabulous filly. You've got Lone Eagle, who was just touched off in the Irish Derby by Hurricane Lane, of course, boosted the form in the Grand Prix de Paris on Thursday evening. Mishrif won those massive races in the Middle East and then ran third in the Eclipse on his return to Europe. It's a marvellous King George. We won't have a huge field, but we're going to have class throughout it. What's your early take on the race?
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic, isn't it, to see the Derby winner turn up in the King George. I cannot remember the last time the English Derby winner turned up in the King George. It was a long time ago. But of course, this used to be one of them big stepping stones. Go and take on the older horses after you'd won the Derby. I remember Galileo winning it after he won the Derby.
I think he was the last one. I think he was the last one.
He might well have been. Yeah, that's a long time ago now, isn't it? When he swatted aside Fantastic Light in what was an absolutely fantastic race. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing Adayar run, because, of course, he was so impressive when he won the Derby. He absolutely blew them away from what was the coffin box, everyone said beforehand. I remember Paul Keeley emailing me and saying, can you find a horse that has won a mile and a half race at Epsom from stall one with more than 12 runners in this century? And the answer was no. It was Oaf, I think, was the last one who won the Derby from stall one. So it is not easy to do, and certainly not easy to do in the way that he did it, because he did it so easily. And like you say, the form has been franked, although there are question marks about whether Hurricane Lane really gave his running in that Epsom Derby. Of course, he did lose two front shoes. So I think that we're going to get a lot of questions answered about Adayar, especially taking on Love. Of course, Love does get the weight, like we've said, but Adayar's the three-year-old, so he gets the three-year-old allowance. That might even things up a little bit. I think it's a fascinating clash between the two proper Group 1 horses, an Oaks winner against a Derby winner. And they're not just the only ones, are they? I've lost count of how many people told me that Mishrif was the best horse in the world after he won in Maidan. So we're looking at an absolutely vintage King George for the first time in years, and I'm very excited about it, and it's going to be a full house there, Lee.
Well, it won't quite be a full house, but it'll be busier than normal. They'd normally take about 30,000 people at Ascot for the King George. I think they're expecting 14,000 to 15,000, which compared to what we've had, it will seem like a full house. I'll just correct myself as well, Graham. When I said that Adayar is the first Derby winner to run in the King George in his three-year-old season. That's not the case. He's the first horse, or he'd be the first horse to win it since Galileo if he goes and wins the King George on Saturday. Horses like Workforce have gone to Ascot from Epsom and disappointed. So it's a marvellous race. I'm like you. I think Adyar, both of you, I think Adyar is a really good Derby winner. I think he makes the race in many ways. And I could see him winning it. I mean, the form of that Derby now looks incredibly strong. So what we're talking about the Derby, what did we make of Hurricane Lane in France last week, Graham?
He looked very, very good, didn't he, Lee? And the rumours before the Epsom Derby was that he was actually out working Adyar at home, and he was the one that they were expecting to star at Epsom. He had excuses, didn't he? He pulled off his front two shoes, and he didn't appear to handle the track that well at Epsom. So I think he's a lot better than we saw that day. And of course, he has gone on to prove it since. The one thing that makes me think that Hurricane Lane is a very, very good horse is we've got Lone Eagle in this race as well, the King George. We haven't even mentioned him. He finished second in the Irish Derby. And when Lone Eagle kicked from the front in the Irish Derby, I was sat there on RP Live with everyone watching saying, this doesn't get caught. This won't get caught. This will never get caught. It won't get caught. They won't catch him. He stays forever. They won't catch him. And then Hurricane Lane caught him. And when you see something like that, and you see a horse do something that you think there's no way he could possibly do, because Lone Eagle's such a strong stay, I didn't think there was any way that Hurricane Lane could run him down. When you see him run him down the way he did, and the horse surprises you like that, it just makes you think, is he something special? I think he might be better than Adyar Hurricane Lane in time, but if Adyar goes and wins this King George, there'll be a lot of people who would disagree, Lee.
Yeah, it's really something to look forward to, the King George. A King George like we used to have at Ascot on Saturday, 3:35 p.m. But good racing, as you said, across the week. Guys, at this stage, what are you looking forward to? What would be your best bets for the week coming up? Mark first.
I'd actually go with pretty immediate. The last race at Ballinrobe this evening. I think there's a lot of value to be had in a horse called Kiva, trained by Ken Condon, the 7:55 or 7:25, I should say. First time up, a lot of promise at Down Royal in a maiden that was made an honest one by Stormy Ireland, better known as a hurdler, going out in front. Finished third, looked green, would have learnt a lot, but then was immediately thrown into a maiden at Sligo over a little bit shorter. I just think that ridden with Kid Gloves on debut, it was much more of a professional outing, so to speak, would have learnt probably more on his second start than he would have learned on his first start. And the bare form, he could go, oh, he's beaten after, you know, has he not quite kind of gone forward as you'd hope? But I actually think the two runs is probably what he needed to be able to win a maiden rather than just go from one to a second. They've given plenty of time. He's a four-year-old who only made his debut in June. So, you know, you get the sense that there's a lot of learning on the job with him at the moment. But just think at around 7-1 for a yard that sent out a Group 1 winner only 10 days ago or so. I think he makes a lot of appeal. He's taken on jumpers in the sense of Jungle Junction. He's a hardy bloke. Those sort of horses, Bridge Native, they're better known over hurdles and over fences in the case of Jungle Junction. So, I mean, just could have a little bit of class and a bit of Lee's the right man to have on your side in that sort of affair where there might be an emphasis on tactical speed. I think he's excellent in terms of judging that type of thing. So, Kiva for me in the last race at Ballinrobe this evening.
Okay. And Graham, what about yourself?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what lines up in the international stakes, the handicapper Tascot on Saturday, because we've got some, well, really good horses in it. For a start, Motokayo is declared, and, well, he's a Group 1 horse on what we saw in the Bunbury Cup last week, isn't he? So if he was to turn up and run off a similar sort of rain, he'd be hard to beat. And I was at Newmarket on Saturday when Accidental Agent, what an old favourite he is. I mean, he loves the Ascot straight track, and he had a right going day on Saturday at Newmarket. He absolutely flew home and showed no signs of his old quirkiness. And then if he's back to anything like his best form, 16-1 could look big about him for the international stakes. But in the same race as that Accidental Agent was always called Beat the Bon, who was quite well fancied, finished last behind Accidental Agent at Newmarket. But watch the race back. I mean, it just pulled like stink, was absolutely in trouble from an early stage. You could have called it far, far too early to say that he'd lost his race by pulling too hard. Now, that was a small runner mile handicap at Newmarket. He'd previously finished fifth behind Real World in the Hunt Cup. We, of course, know that form looks fairly strong given what Real World did last week. And I think that a much stronger pace, bigger field could really suit Beat the Bon. So I'll be sticking with Beat the Bon each way if he lines up in the 3 o'clock at Ascot on Saturday, the international handicap.
And just tell me before... Oh, go on, Mark.
Sorry, just while we're on the topic, you're some man to be taking a punt on the international a week out. I'd need at least 2 days, 3 days to be nailing my colours to the mast. But just what we're talking about, big price shouts there and fair play to Keith Melrose. I have to just give a quick mention to my colleague David Jennings. In terms of losing anti-post tips, I think his one around this time last year, putting up Snowfall for the 1,000 guineas at 50-1, must go down as one of the best efforts in recent days that hasn't hit the target. So just thought that was worth mentioning. Fair play to DJ. It was a very, very nearly one, even though it was far away. But it was around this time last year before she ran the Silver Flash 50s. I hope he still has the docket anyway to keep the memories.
It's a moral victory, but you can't buy carrots with a moral victory. And Graham, before we finish, accidental agent, did he get a big cheer at Newmarket?
He did, yes. Although I must admit, there wasn't a huge crowd at Newmarket because the restrictions were still in place. Of course, they're all gone now, thankfully. But it was a lovely afternoon, you know, beautiful sunshine. And everyone that was there was pleased to see the old boy put his head in front of the line. And he really did show a little bit of that old sharp turn of speed that he used to have. So, I was so excited to see him back to form. It'll be cracking to see him back at Ascot. He loves it, Ascot, don't he, accidental agent?
He does. He's an absolutely smashing horse. He will hopefully be at Ascot on Saturday. Our eyes will be at Ascot on Saturday, and we'll be looking forward to it very much indeed. And you will hear much more Ascot talk on Friday when the lads and lassies will have a detailed look at the weekend's racing. And if you enjoy these shows, please make sure you rate, review and subscribe wherever you are listening to us. I've read that exactly as it was written down for me on the script. I hope I didn't fluff the lines. So until next time, goodbye.